You had a warm feeling for Doty. Go ahead.
Yes. I had a warm feeling for Mary McKenna. There were several people on it. There were several people among the nine you didn't mention who, after that meeting, quit and refused to be part of it because Sobotka was dominating the meeting.
In later years, who do you think of very highly of? Later, you know, in like the 1980s and 70s.
There are several, but I've forgotten their names. You see, you have to remember that I have an approaching Alzheimer's disease. And
I wouldn't think so.
Well, you may not think so, but I know so. And I've been taking such things as ginkgo, you know, the extract of the ginkgo tree. And I've been drinking a lot of warm, hot tea because the papers appear from time to time describing, comparing, say, those who drink hot tea and those who drink coffee. And they say if you drink hot tea, especially black tea, that you have a lesser severe case of Alzheimer's disease.
Do you think it worked with you?
I don't know. You see, I haven't got much of a memory.
Well, tell me, what do you remember Mort Epstein?
He was the one I was trying to think of. Mort Epstein's son committed suicide. One of the characteristics of young folks is to get a noose and hang it up and twist it until they almost choke. And sometimes they overdo it and die. And Mort Epstein's son committed suicide that way. You know, it's a sort of a sexual excitement that they get. But Mort Epstein always sided with, whenever I was at a meeting, everybody was against me because I was a purist. I said that the clinical chemist should be a clinical chemist. And as a result, see, I liked Mort Epstein because he treated me to some very tasteful spaghetti.
Well, during your career, you were at several different hospitals, chair of the Department of Biochemistry after you left Jewish Hospital. Which one of those positions did you think you had the best opportunities for your career development?
I didn't have a good opportunity in any of them. For example, I was at the St. Vincent's Hospital, and I moved my X-ray spectrometer there, and they made me sign a paper saying that if anybody got hurt, that I would be responsible personally for the X-ray spectrometer. That's the kind of influence I had, and that's the and the more they opposed me, the more the stronger wave came. Well, I'm a very stubborn guy.
What was it that persuaded you to move to St. Vincent's from Rockford Memorial Hospital then? If they didn't,
I told you what. I started getting letters saying, thanking me for helping them save their patients. And I knew that that meant jail, straight in jail for me. There would be one doctor who would put an official complaint to the AMA. The AMA had made a deal with a chemist, a clinical chemist, in 1929, that they would not interfere with the development of clinical chemistry. But they did. And if the AMA would like to get some of these letters that my wife had. Do you have any of those letters around?
I look for them, Dr. Nelson.
What?
I look. No, I don't know where they're at.
Sam, so that means at Rockford you did have very good opportunities, as
yes,
called by this book, to
at Rockford, I could convince the doctors that I was useful to them by working with them with patients. For example, one of the patients, I went to New York City to look for a job, and I was treating a patient who had a ruptured appendix. And I told the people there that at the Brooklyn Jewish, I had seen that something like 70 patients who had a ruptured appendix, and they all referred the pain to some other part of the body. And there were several physicians who said that this patient had a ruptured diverticulum. You know, a diverticulum is a part of the opposite side of the bed. So I said to them, if anybody here wants to take my bet, I'll bet them $1 to $1 that this patient does not have a ruptured diverticulum. So they said, how do you know that? They said, I said, because I used to make rounds at the Brooklyn Jewish Hospital, and I saw about 90 patients with the ruptured appendices, and they all had pain. See, that was in this work. And they all had referred the pain to the other side of their body. Well, you read it when you get home.
Sam, when you... What? If I understand your explanation, you left Rockford because you were afraid that the AMA would
get after
you because you participated in patient care so
That's
intimately.
Right.
But you only spent a year at St. Vincent's before going to Roosevelt, I guess it was.
Yes. Well, because at St. Vincent's, the nuns were terrible. They kept bothering me. You know, with my X-ray spectrometer, they felt that there was a public menace.
Did you take your X-ray spectrometer to Roosevelt with you?
Yes. And they felt that I should be personally responsible for it. And
was the attitude at Roosevelt?
There was a sister
better
signed above me to watch that. It was just to watch that machine. Her name was Sister Henrietta. And she would hang around and watch the, see to it that nobody went near the X-ray spectrometer. And I never did. Later on, it turned out that X-ray spectrometry was used by NASA in analyzing moon rocks and things like that.
Did you find the reception and the opportunities at Roosevelt Hospital better than you had found at St. Vincent?
No, I never found any acceptable place as acceptable as Rockford Memorial. The reason being that this fellow here, this one person, Woodruff L. Crawford, he brought me into Rockford, and he sort of felt responsible for me, so he would pay close attention to what I was doing, and he was very helpful. The Muncie was his assistant, and so these three doctors were helpful. And saw how I operated, and they saw the logic of what it was.
What was life like as a clinical chemist at Roosevelt?
At Roosevelt? That's a good question. I didn't get a chance to practice as a clinical chemist at Roosevelt.
But you must have made a pretty good name for yourself, because didn't Michael Reese invite you to come back to Illinois?
My reputation was made in Rockford.
Okay. So what got you to go back to Illinois?
Because I wanted to get away from these letters that started to pile in. My wife has a bunch of them. If I had them here, you'd see that I had committed suicide 6 times over. I used to smoke long cigars, and then I stopped.
I didn't know you when you smoked cigars.
I started smoking in Rockford before I met you. And I got pneumonia, and I stopped smoking for about a month. And I never went back to it.
Well, I suppose you officially retired in 1979 when you were 70 years old.
That's right.
And you moved here to Knoxville. What prompted you to choose Knoxville as the place for your retirement?
Because my son was inviting me to come here.
This was your good son, right?
No, this is my bad son.
So you went to the home of your bad son?
I didn't know that what he was trying to do was trying to destroy me. And he's succeeded pretty well. You see, he kept writing letters to the state saying that I shouldn't drive a car, I'm too old. But he didn't write the letters. He always got some friend of his to write letters. They never examined me. They just signed anything he wrote. I recognized his handwriting many times, but what I intend to do is to sell this house and get out of Knoxville, to get away from him.
Where do you want to go?
I will go to my brother's house.
Where is that?
That's New Jersey. They have a reciprocal agreement with Knoxville. But he has a son who lives in Montana. I may end up in Montana.
Have you ever been to Montana?
Pardon me?
Have you ever been to Montana?
No. I'll go anywhere where I can get away from this evil monster that's around my neck.
What about Tulane? What about Texas?
Texas also has a reciprocal agreement with Tennessee.
Reciprocal for what? A driver's license?
Yes. In other words, he has marked me lousy. He's marked me as a criminal. And I don't like that.
Where is your son Ethan living?
Ethan lives in Texas. Had I known what I know now, I would never have moved into Knoxville. I would have moved to Texas.
Well, while you've been in Knoxville, you've had an appointment as adjunct professor at the College of Veterinary Medicine. Have you found that to be reasonably satisfying?
That's just on paper.
You haven't had anything to do there?
No.
Well, I came to visit you one time. And
I lectured to the students there on use of clinical chemistry in animals. And I gave courses. But
you had office space and lab space.
I had office space and lab space.
Well, that must have been satisfying for your retirement period.
That was very satisfying. But my son got after me and got them to take it away. He said to me, "I've got to get you under control." That's the way he put it.
Sounds like what you used to say to me.
What?
Sounds like what you used to say to me.
That I have to get you under control. Well, I don't think I ever tried to get you under control.
All right.
Well, do you think of anything else that you need to tell us to make the story about your career and your association with AACC complete?
If I don't get out of the clutches of my older son, I'll commit suicide.
Well, we hope it won't come to that.
I hope so, too. because I can't stand the son of a bitch. When I look at him, I get angry just looking at him.
He seems, though, that he has your welfare in mind.
That's a lot of crap.
Oh.
He doesn't have my welfare in mind. He wants to control me. He's a vindictive louse.
Well, surely he didn't inherit that trait from you.
Well, I don't know. He's stubborn and I'm stubborn.
Dr. Washoe, do you think of more that you want to ask?
Sam, let's talk a little about Ethel.
Ethel
played a role in your career through the years.
Ethel was her god was this son. That's why I'm here. I never would have come here except for my wife. That was her oldest son, her darling. And she didn't see him as I see him. Because he was not opposing her. If she wanted a lift to downtown or a place like that, he immediately rushed and gave it to her. If I wanted a lift, the answer was no.
But going back in time a little bit, in the early days of your career, can you remember how Ethel participated?
She never participated much in my career. She just sort of... Well, I'll give you an example. Let's assume that these are three rooms connected. She was studying in this room. The kids were in this room. They wanted to get over here to get to sleep. She wouldn't let them through until she was finished studying. She went to Brooklyn College and was a bookworm. And
Sam, I have some good memories of you and Ethel. What did you do at Michael Reese every Christmas time? Do you remember
that? Christmas time, yes. I used to give out gifts to the technicians.
And they put on a potluck thing and all the ethnic dishes, right?
That's right.
And didn't Ethel help you choose the gifts?
No, she didn't help me at all. When I met a speech in Montreal and came home exhausted, the first thing she asked me was whether I got a good reception. She was not interested in me at all. She just wanted to use me as a totem pole, you might say. She was part of. I'm a very unhappy man, you see. And I have always been a very unhappy man.
But you've had a very successful career.
I know, it's been successful for other people, but not for me. I have not achieved what my goals were.
What were your goals?
My goals were to make the clinical chemist a self-respecting individual.
You don't think they are self-respecting?
No. I made him, he's still a tool of the pathologist.
You certainly have developed a number of techniques, procedures that have meant better medicine for lots of patients.
That's true. But I didn't develop it for the patients, I developed it for a patient. In other words, when I had a particular patient, and when you read this book, you got a copy of this,
yeah.
I hope, you'll see that I call it the condition of the premature, an immature infant. But actually, I'm merely saying that, for want of a better word, I call it adrenal immaturity. Because that's what would happen if he did have adrenal immaturity. And these are different points of my high points in my career, you might say, these three papers.
Mm-hmm.
This is my initial conception of the idea of a clinical chemist society. This is was accidentally this member of the American Chemical Society came to visit me, and he wrote this article. And this is the final article by Faulkner, who wrote the article reviewing my career. And this is fairly complete. You see, what they all are influenced by is the fact that when they came here, they saw me working outside, pouring cement or concrete or something like that, you see. Because I like to do that. Those things. I like to build something. Like these bookcases. They're too big. If I had to do over again, I'd make them smaller.
Well, they're filled up with books. You'd have to have more of them if you had them smaller.
I've got two more of them down in the basement. I didn't show you those. Maybe I should finish the tour of this section here. Would you like to come with me? And
I will interrupt the recording at this time and perhaps get back to it after you give us a tour of your house. You referred during the conversation so far to your two sons, Stephen and Ethan.
Yes.
Did you have any other children?
Yes, I had two girls. One was Lisa and the other was Nina.
Are they professionals also?
Well,
like your son?
So. Lisa is a works for the CIA.
What did she do there? Was she a spy?
No, it was the highest job that you can have in our category. She went to the University of Pittsburgh, and she got a PhD in linguistics. So she's been figuring out new and better ways of training spies. In other words, she gets behind a curtain of some sort and has the spy interviewed by someone who's looking to see if it's a spy. And if he's unsuccessful, then she applies that she feels she's been successful. If he is successful in calling out which of the five or six people that they have is a spy and which is actually... In other words, she teaches them to speak the native language of a particular community.
That's right. That's
rather
right.
Than the book learning. And she invented that system.
And which daughter is that?
Lisa.
That's Lisa.
Her name is Alyssa Rebecca.
And what does your other daughter do?
She,
and with Israel.
Is taken up with animal rights. So she makes recordings of teaching sessions for Arab and Jewish children in Israel. And she called the organization Chai, C-H-A-I, which means life in Hebrew. But it's officially the Committee to Help the Animals in Israel. And she organized the thing and has raised money for it. And I've given her money for it.
Does she live in Israel?
No. She visits Israel and goes from school to school, both Arabic and Israeli, and makes speeches.
Where does Lisa live?
Lisa lives in Washington, D.C.
And your other daughter's name is what?
Nina Beth.
Nina.
Where does Nina live?
Nina lives in Washington also. She's the daughter named after my mother. My mother's name was Basha Hannah. Bessie Anna or Betty Ann. And she has her name reversed. Ann Betty. Oh, no, well, Nina Beth, we called her when she was young. And that's my younger daughter. They're both professionals.
And you have about 7 grandchildren, you said?
Yes. And most of them are female.
You think any of them will become a clinical chemist?
No. They've all chosen their careers by now. The girls have their careers as, you might say, instructors or teachers. The boy is still in a formative stage. I don't know what his career is going to be. Mm-hmm. But he drives a car, and I've spent most of my available cash to help him go to Israel, and it has paid off. I went to a synagogue during the high holidays, and they got new books, and the print got smaller, and the pages got shinier. It was very difficult for a person with my refractive vision to see. Mm-hmm. And he read it to me as fluently as you can. And that was worth all the money that I spent for him.
He read it to you in Hebrew?
Well, he can read Hebrew. So he read the Hebrew. Mm-hmm. And I, of course, I translated it into English. Mm-hmm. But my bad son has married, started out by living illegally with a woman, and she was pregnant, and I paid him the money to go to Cuba so she could get an abortion. He then came back, and he came back to Knoxville, and he took up with another nurse, and she was pregnant, and he was going to marry her. So he asked me to investigate her. So I investigated her, and I found out that she was a little crazy. So I told him what I just found out. He married her and he had 2 more children. The children are adorable, but he has remained unchanged. His object in life is to destroy me. I went downstairs and I discovered something else he had done. You see, I was making capillaries out of, I had an oxygen torch and a connection for an oxygen for an oxygen tank. So I turned back the oxygen tank, and I was making capillaries by using the gas and a micro burner. So he found that out. So I noticed that down below he had the gas turned off. He sits up nights figuring out ways of torturing me.
Maybe he's afraid you are going to burn yourself.
That's baloney. That's what he would like to see.
Sam, what the...
These are the arguments he uses, and he's doing these things for my benefit.
Sam, is Nina married?
Nina, yes. She's married to a fellow by the name of Cohen.
Do they have children?
No, they have no children. And